Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, listeners. I'd like to invite you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, download our ebook on organic gardening basics, and get started on building your very own organic oasis today. Welcome to the show today. I'm super excited to introduce a guest from, there's a organization down in Missoula where I went to college called the Missoula Urban Demonstration Project, and it's sometimes known as MUD. And they've been down there since 1981, which is a little bit before I went to school there. And they're just really an amazing organization. I don't know if there are other organizations like this around the United States, but I think once you hear about it, you're going to look for one in your area or in other countries. So my guest today, her name is Ellie Costello. So welcome to the show, Ellie.
Hey, thank you, Jackie. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you. And so I know once listeners, if they've never heard of a program like this, I don't know if there are other programs. Is this, do you know, is this just a Missoula thing or Montana thing, or are there other ones?
Well, there are other programs that have had components that are similar to what MUD offers. We started out as a demonstration sustainable living house. And so there are others, which I can't list any off the top of my head at the moment.
That's okay.
In Missoula, a similar organization might be the UM LAT, which is the Forum for Living with Appropriate Technology, that also does demonstration sustainable living, but it takes a different form. It's specifically with students and trying to create a learning community at the university there.
Oh, okay.
But MUD has evolved from that time and its inception as that demonstration housing project. And actually, as of this year, we sold our original houses that we owned, and we have moved sites. So now MUD's forte is a tool library located kind of close to a building reuse center.
Okay. Okay, so you were telling us about MUD. I had this problem this morning, the episode I was editing and listening to. Our call got dropped two or three times.
Yeah, that's fine. So MUD has evolved a lot from its inception in 1981 as this sustainable living demonstration house. And as of this summer, we sold the original housing sites that MUD owned and are operating with our main program as a tool library, which is located really conveniently next to a sustainable reuse materials facility called Home Resource. And so we have the MUD project and our tool library where you can come get all the things you'll need to actually manipulate the resources you can get from Home Resource. So it's a pretty nice partnership. We're doing that, and we're working on some educational programs. We offer a slate of workshops throughout the year, in addition to what's going on with our tool library. Yeah.
Okay. So let's go ahead and start with maybe like your background. Are you from Missoula? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself and how maybe you got involved with this.
Sure. I am not from Missoula. I've been in Montana about 6 years now, but I hail from the DC area. I grew up in Virginia mostly. And I came out here right after finishing undergrad. As you know, being in Montana for a long time. Are you from Montana, Jackie?
Nope. I moved out here from New York in 1988.
Okay. So you've been here longer than I have by far, but you know then, especially coming from the East, it's so beautiful out here. And so I came out pretty enamored of the mountains and the rivers that you can find, and started getting dirty by doing trail crew and working on some sustainable farms in the Missoula area. So I did that and then ended up going to graduate school here in Missoula. I studied environmental studies and focused on alternatives to the consolidated seed market, working with Organic Seed Alliance and doing some research for some small-scale seed companies, as well as working with some seed cooperatives. So I did that and finished that up just this past winter. And now I'm, of course, the director for MUD, and I'm also farming a small acreage, about a half an acre, for myself for next season, which I'm pretty excited about. And it's all in the process of starting my own value-added soup business. So growing food that will eventually become soup. So that's a little bit about what's happening in my life.
Awesome. When I first, you know, when I was in college back in 1988, there was this really cool little restaurant called Tori's Home Cooking. And he had a huge farm down in Stevensville. And then they had this little restaurant in Missoula that served all the food that they grew on their farm. It was pretty cool. So that kind of sounds like your idea, sort of. So yep. Now, wait, you said you were getting a half acre for yourself from where? Like, does Mud have gardens too? I don't know that much about it, I guess.
Oh, sure. No, Mud does have a small urban garden that is located on our site, where we have about three different garden plots and a small orchard with just five or six trees. And we do a lot of demonstrations of urban gardening. But where I'm farming is actually separate from that. It's with an organization called Farm, and it's on a site called Tower Gardens. So they rent out larger size plots to help incubate new farmers. So instead of going to like a community garden and getting a maybe a 25-foot plot, you can get half acres or quarter acres or things like that.
So where, and that's in Missoula still, or is it like out of town somewhere?
Just outside city limits. So it's Missoula County, but not technically in the city.
Like on the north side of town or south side, or?
Oh, it's west of town. So, yeah, you head out past
the airport.
It's kind of a big cutoff here. And so you pass Reserve Street and you go beyond that. But it is definitely suburban in its setting. It's a lot of houses around that area, but with just slightly larger plots than you find in the city limits.
Nice. I like that area. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Oh, well, that must be fun.
Great. Yeah, okay. Planting a lot of garlic right now.
Okay. No, I don't know if listeners really care. I don't even know if they do care where I am. But just so you know, Missoula is 4 hours south of me, basically 180 miles. So your climate is just a little bit warmer than us. Not much. Okay. But we're just a little bit. I'm right up by the Canadian border. So it's just a little bit colder here. And your days are just slightly longer. Believe it or not. Not much. I think. I'm pretty sure. Okay. Well, so then tell us a little bit about your first gardening experience. Like, who were you with? Were you a little kid, an adult?
Oh, sure. Well, my first gardening experiences were watching my mother split iris bulbs and mail half the iris bulb to her father to plant in New York. And this was from Virginia. And that was mainly it was like seeing some flower gardening and landscaping go on around my home. But I didn't have any interest in it at that time. Maybe it's because it's so freaking hot in Virginia that I just did not want to be out there digging in the dirt in the humidity. For some reason, I really remember hating to put my hand into gloves. That gardening gloves just felt so scary and dirty with your hand inside them, which is strange now because gloves are my favorite thing to be wearing. They protect you from everything. It's like coming home to put your hand into an old glove. But as a child, that was revolting for some reason. So that was my first gardening experience, which didn't really have much to do with food, but I got really interested in food systems through a little bit of a back entryway. I worked with a CSA when I was in an undergrad in Charlottesville, Virginia, that would aggregate food from several different farmers and sell a CSA based on a conglomeration of farms as opposed to one farm just providing it. And so we were just offering that to that individuals could get a greater variety of goods. And so that was my first experience kind of going around and seeing different small scale agriculture as I drove a truck and picked up produce and set up produce market stand style. And really wanted to get to know more about the farming part of it at that point.
Nice. I like all that. People are probably going to be like, wow, I didn't know there were CSAs. I didn't know there were CSAs where there were multiple farms working together. I love mm-hmm. that. More cooperation. And I meant to tell you, I just had Neva on, or maybe I told you that before I asked you to come on, but Neva was just who is the one of the directors or one of the professors at the Environmental Studies program at the University of Montana, if listeners are wondering who Neva is.
Yeah, and she's just wonderful powerhouse of an environmental and agricultural advocate. I have not enough good things to say about Neva.
Well, that was when we went to this Aero conference a couple of weeks ago, and the students that she brought were just raving about her. And I actually just barely ran into her in passing on the last day and was like, hey, I've heard so many great things about you. And, would you come on the show? And that was actually how we met there.
I am so glad.
She's wonderful. I'm thinking about going and getting my grad degree from the Environmental Studies program.
I would really encourage you to do so. It's so much fun. So I'm a recent grad from that program. I finished up in December, January, this past winter. And it's a wonderful opportunity to have a community that's thinking about the things you're thinking about and helping propel each other forward within those areas. And I'm so glad to hear that you were at the Aero conference, because I was just recently on the board of Aero. I termed out at that conference, actually. So it's great that people are making connections there, because that is one of the main goals of hosting it every year.
So did I meet you there? Were you there?
I was there. I was frequently yelling at people and corralling them to do things. I often stood on tables and gave instructions. So you probably saw me. I organized a lot of the conference activities, but didn't necessarily lead workshops or anything there.
Okay. I think I remember who you are now. Interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries.
Yeah, I didn't even really it's so funny because I've had my Aero license plates for 5 years now and didn't really know anything about it until I started my podcast and I had this guest on, Laura Behenna, who was also there with us. And then I went to the blog and saw Jennifer's blog and I was just like, oh my goodness. And I learned so much since I read her blog this summer. And I just, to me, that's more the power of blogging. It's just how much that changed and how much I learned since that blog. And then when Jennifer came on the show, she told me about the expo and I was like, I have to go. And it was so fun because one of my other guests, somebody else I didn't ever know before, Robin Kelson, who has the Good Sea Company Whitefish, drove me and we drove together.
Yeah. And I've worked with Robin both through Aero and for Organic Seed Alliance, who I work for as well. I contract with them. I did a lot of research.
I was going to ask you, so what's a seed alliance? What's that?
So Organic Seed Alliance is actually just the name of a nonprofit and we work on education, advocacy, and research around organic seed issues. So it's a pretty broad swath of work to be doing, to be honest. So everything from projects partnering with plant breeders to cultivate new varieties that work in organic seed systems, to working on property technology issues for seeds, which is a big issue right now, having inappropriate technologies being used to protect seed usage. So like a patent on a seed, which isn't an invention. So things like that. And then there's a lot of education that Organic Seed Alliance does as well, hosting the Organic Seed Growers Conference and partnering with Organicology, which is another conference, and then using a lot of promotional outlets to try to garner interest and support for the organic seed movement. So that's that bag. That's what OSA does.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us tell us more about mud.
Sure. So I think we covered a little bit about what our main programs are with MUD. It's exciting. I've been there just a month now as the director, so I'm pretty new to the organization, but we've created a new strategic plan for the next 5 years that is working towards growing our education and really serving the Missoula community through doing well what we already have. So with our tool library, we're hoping to grow that and really get a lot more people engaged and then teach them about how to use tools so that it can be an empowering place for individuals to come instead of feeling a little bit daunting to approach. We have shipping containers as our storage for the tool library. So we're working hard to make it so that someone doesn't come and walk into the shipping container and feel intimidated by all these tools they don't know on the wall, but instead they have guidance there to show them how to use those things and what they can accomplish to help them either do their own gardening at home or do at-home projects. And we really encourage a lot of kind of thinking about small spaces and how to live in small spaces well. So furthering those things quite a bit for the next 5 years. So that's what we're working on right now.
Okay. But let's back up a little, because I have a feeling like a lot of listeners are still like wondering, what is a tool library exactly? And how does that work? I mean, some people probably have never, I would think a lot of people have never heard of that.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's such a wonderful resource. So basically a tool library operates just like any other library where you can come, you sign up and become a member, and then you can check out tools for free. And there's some tools that have fees associated with them if they use gas or if they're in super high demand. Like, we only have 2 cider presses. And as you can imagine, in October and November, cider presses are the most sought after, coveted tools. And so we charge a fee to go with those to try to help support the fact that they're going to be being used a lot and need more maintenance. So basically, you'll come, you'll sign up to be a member. We do have a membership fee associated that helps us keep our doors open, but it's on a sliding scale based on income. And then you can come use tools and borrow tools to your heart's content. We have a truck share associated with the tool library so that if you either don't own a vehicle or want to own a smaller vehicle, then there's a community truck that you can go and use like the 2 times a year when maybe hauling something is your order of the day. And the idea behind the tool library is to create shared resources for the community. So it's often true that people don't need to use their tools every single day. They only need them, 3 times a year. They might need a screw, like a power drill or something. And so this allows us to then not have to consume quite as much because we're sharing those resources instead of having to have everybody own their own individual drill or something like that. And we also have larger tools. We have things like rototillers. Our most popular tools are probably lawnmowers that people come rent. So it's just a really accessible community resource. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's totally amazing to me. And that it's been running for so long. It's been super successful. So people are obviously taking good care of the tools and returning them properly. And then I was thinking, like with the cider prep, like is it like when you come and borrow something, like is there a time limit, like a 24 hours or 48 hours or something? Or do different tool items have different time limits, or is there anything like that?
Yep, exactly. So things that are in high demand, you can check out just until the next tool library open day, because we're not open every day right now. We would like to be in the future, but some things you can only check out for that day or that until the next tool library check-in time. And then some things are more like you can take it for a week. It like we have a lot of like rakes. So you could take a rake and not have to bring it back the next day. Things like that. So it depends on the tool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I was looking at some of the tools on the website and I thought, wow, they've really expanded. There's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. I really owe a lot of appreciation to members and donors because a lot of our tools are donated to us and then we are able to maintain and really offer them out to other people. We have some really wonderful staff Don, our head tool librarian, is an excellent fixer of things, all things. And so it's really great for us to have him to play with people's old tools and make them functioning for us again. So we have a lot of support from the community in that, and we wouldn't be operating without it.
Nice. So how do you like, do you have fundraisers each year? Or like, how would people donate if they wanted to anyway?
For our tool donations, those mostly are just whenever somebody decides to drop something off for us, we're happy to accept it. We do operate, because we offer other programming as well. We do operate like most nonprofits. We're working on our year-end appeal right now. We do some events as fundraisers. We have a signature event of Earth Day, which we host every year in Harris Park.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, so Earth Day, which I haven't yet been a part of MUD for Earth Day.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm really excited about it. We host a little Earth Day fair over at Harris Park. We kick it off with a Earth Day 5K and get people moving. And then we have music and food vendors and people who want to share information about sustainability resources that come out to host with us. They table there and offer their wares. And we have a party. And that's pretty much it. And we thank everyone when we go home feeling good. Yeah.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I should say it's in the MUD mission to celebrate.
Okay.
Or in our vision to celebrate, because we do think that education, demonstration, and celebration of sustainability work is important. And so Earth Day, it has educational components and demonstrational components, but it's really about bringing community together to celebrate what we do as a community. So it's nice that we have that. It's part of what drew me to the organization, that the idea that it's worthwhile to celebrate good work.
I like that. It's the perfect day to celebrate it too. And that's one of the things I always think, if I wasn't married and if I was going to live in any other city in the world, I would probably live in Missoula. Especially if I was by myself. It'd be hard for me to live where I live right now. Because Missoula is just like, it's always like whenever I go there, the first place I go is the good food store. And I just can just sit there and it's just nice to have like all these earth-friendly, conscious people around me. And I just feel like calmer just being in there for a little bit, and kind of a good way to get back into the Missoula vibe. And then it's just, I just like the people there. They have a really good, you know, I think there's a lot of people there that are, you know, good stewards of the earth and really care about our planet and have kind of a common bond, or I don't know. Anyway, okay, so let's see. What else can you tell us about? So what other programs are there besides the tool library again?
So our main other programming right now is a workshop series. And we've been offering about a workshop a month, sometimes more. Sometimes this year we had a couple that couldn't happen because of weather. And so we offer these educational workshops around a lot of different skill sets. And one thing that we're going to be looking to do next year is grow to have an educational series so that we can offer workshops that are tied together instead of independent. Here's like one day about this topic. We're going to start with an urban gardening short course where it's going to take folks from seed and planting seeds in our little greenhouse to putting food up at the end of the year and learning how to put the garden to bed. And we'll tie those workshops together all throughout the season. And we're using that as a pilot to try to further that type of connected educational space for individuals around specific topic areas. So while we're starting with urban gardening, we'd like to move to places like energy efficiency in the home, which there's a lot of opportunity. Brazil has a lot of old homes that could really be revved up in terms of their energy efficiency and energy use. So doing things like that, and then doing pretty basic educational series where we just teach people about how to use tools and becoming competent doing so. And then it will allow folks to be empowered to not only use our resources, but to create whatever they'd like to create or take on new tasks for themselves within their own home. So that's the direction that we're going. We also offer some youth educational programming. And with that, right now, it's several different curriculum boxes that teachers can check out. And they're on things like, how to deal with trash or reduce trash and topics like that. And we are looking to rev that up as well as we move forward. But we're starting with the more adult educational components and just letting that kind of exist for the time being as these curriculum boxes, as opposed to really putting a lot of leverage behind it just yet. So we do those things, and then our events like the Earth Day celebration, and we host a garden party, and then we host occasional what we call mud mingles, where we just bring people together in the community who are interested in issues of sustainability, and an opportunity to socialize and feel your community around that and make connections, kind of like what Aero does by hosting the Aero conference. It's like that, but on a smaller scale.
Nice. I like that. You know what I was going to ask you? So in the beginning, you were saying something about your next door to, what was it? Some kind of a home resource. What's home resource?
Home Resource is another really wonderful Missoula nonprofit. They are a building reuse center. So while we offer tools for folks, Home Resource offers affordable materials that have been salvaged from old buildings or things that have been also donated by people. So they've got all kinds of building material and everything from old cabinets and doors and windows to paint and bolts and wood slabs. And I think one of the things that they were advertising in their newsletter was a propane stove that you could put into your home. So they have all kinds of goodies there that you can go shop through in their warehouse and then come over to us and borrow some tools to make them into your own perfect little project.
Okay, so we have a place like that in Kalispell that's run through Habitat for Humanity. It's called the, the resource habitat, but I thought it was reuse or redo or I can't believe I can't think of it right now. But is it like that? And their stuff is for sale. Is the home resource, their stuff is for sale too, right? It's not a borrowing situation like yours.
Yeah, it's for sale, but it's all just done on an affordable level, so that because it is reuse material and it's going to be repurposed. So they attach prices to it that make it easy for folks to do their projects. So it's not breaking the bank.
Our place is called the Restore. That's what it is.
Yeah. I've heard of that.
It's
actually
the Restore.
It's similar. And there's a lot of centers like that in different cities.
Mm-hmm. So people might know about one like that in their city, and then they could think about maybe creating some kind of tool library there or looking to see if there's one that they don't even know exists.
Yep. On a mud site, and we're working towards making it pretty holistic within that space of being able to compost things there, use that compost as our fertilizer. And then we try to demonstrate different projects that you could do for your own urban garden. So we'll do like topsy-turvy buckets of tomatoes so that you can have a hanging bucket of tomatoes and it takes up less space, or container gardening. We'll demonstrate those things. We also try to do water-wise gardening. We use a drip system, and that's on a timer to show people that you can do this without as much time investment as some people think. And
nice.
Yeah, and we have a native plants garden, which is also, which is really truly water-wise. We don't water at all, and it's just a nice landscaping space, and so folks can then see what you can do with limited resources to make your space beautiful. And then besides that, we are developing our educational series around gardening for this coming year. But this past year, we did some workshops where we did vertical gardening and built vertical gardening pallets that you can put up against the side of your home to grow food. And we also did a putting the garden to bed workshop that demonstrated everything from lasagna gardening and seed saving to garlic planting. So those are the kinds of things we're doing there.
Nice. I like that. My stepdaughter put up one of those pallet things in front of her house full of, it was full of just flowers, but it looked really pretty. I like the way that came out.
Yeah, they're so nice. Mm-hmm.
And then what are those things that you were talking about in the beginning? Topsy-turvy bucket tomatoes?
Yeah.
How does that work?
You basically will drill a hole at the bottom of a bucket to be able to let the plant hang down from it. And you'll fill a bucket with soil. And the tomato will grow from the bottom. So you'll be hanging this bucket up. And then it doesn't need a ton of water because it's not going to go dissipate into the ground. So it'll grow down from that bucket instead of growing up. So if you don't have a garden plot and just have a place where you could hang a plant inside your home, you could grow tomatoes. And it would be pretty easy.
Nice. I like that. Mm-hmm. And especially like cherry tomato. I can just picture a cherry tomato because those are, to me, always the best because you can just grab them really quick and every time you get out in the garden. But probably also like you know, the big tomatoes, that might be good for us to try because I was just telling somebody the other day, ours really get red on the plant. Mm-hmm. You know, we almost always have tomatoes and bring them in the house. So that would be nice to have a bucket with a plant in the house.
Yeah, and you can move it inside or outside depending on the time of year. So you could have them all outside and then save them for longer by moving them indoors.
I like that. Cool. All right. I'm glad we recorded this part. Anything else?
That's maybe what I got for now.
Okay, cool. That was perfect.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. Wolf, Ellie, it was super fun to talk with you.
Oh, you too.
I'm sure we probably met at the Aero thing and I just didn't connect it when Neva said I should contact you. So, I don't know. Do you want to tell how listeners can find out about MUD if they want to, or connect with you if they have any questions or anything?
Oh, that would be great. Yes. So MUD, we have a website just like everybody does these days. So we're mudproject.org. And you can also find us on Facebook where we give pretty good updates. And we'll send out newsletters and things like that to our followers if you're interested in hearing what's going on with MUD throughout the year. And I don't know what else that you guys should know. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I don't remember the Twitter account, but the Instagram is MUD_project. If you search for that, you'll find us. And but I would look for us online or on Facebook. Those are our most active.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll put the links to everything in the show notes page.
Oh, great.
So, great. Well, thanks so much, Ellie, for talking to us today.
Oh, thank you. I hope you have a really nice afternoon.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just Organic Gardener organicgardenerpodcast.com, and you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.